Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, is a guy that when asked, how do you pay for all these parking tickets, he said, straight cash, homie. He is, of course, the captain.
Because, homie, don't play that. It's good to be seen, and it's good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
Today we are drinking Diamond Bear Brewing Company's Pale Ale out of Little Rock, Arkansas, garage grade, 3.5 bottle caps out of 5. You know, I've never been to Little Rock.
Right.
But I was reading this travel magazine recently saying Little Rock is a very, very cool city to travel to. Mm. And if I were there, Captain, I would be drinking some Diamond Bear Pale Ale because this is earthy malts versus bright, beautiful hops that is highly drinkable. They worked on perfecting this recipe for 2 years, and Diamond Bear was brought to us by these lovely garage guys and girls. First up, we have Dee and Jen, who says, we love you guys. This is from out in the cornfields of Iowa.
And a big shout out to Shannon in El Paso, Texas.
Next, we have Justine in Upway, Victoria, Australia.
And all the way from Sweden, we have Annika.
And we also have Maritza from San Fernando, California.
And last but not least, a big we like your jib to Marina over in England.
So thanks to everyone who helped to fill up the fridge for this week's show. If you'd like to help us with our next beer run, go to truecrimegarage.com and click on the donate button.
And for all old episodes or bonus episodes, check out the website store at truecrimegarage.com or in the iTunes store.
All right, Captain, that's enough of the business. Everybody gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime. Nineteen-year-old Melissa Witt disappeared from the Bowling World parking lot on December 1st, 1994. Now, her body was found about 6 weeks later. On yesterday's show, we were able to go through some of the early leads in the investigation, what they were tracking down, and then the finding of her body. Today, we want to get into some of the suspects. LaDonna had said that there were a lot of the level 3 sex offenders in the area. Well, there were also some very dangerous people that were probably in that area in December of 1994, and we'll get into that today.
So let's dive into the two major suspects. Let's start with Travis Crouch.
Absolutely. Now, there are quite a few suspects, some of them that I can't talk about, but some of the most promising suspects are what I'd like to touch on, and there's two of those. And the first is Travis Dale Crouch. And Travis is an Arkansas native. He is currently in prison in Colorado. We can touch touch on why, but he's from the Ozark area. In fact, he lived and worked at a church camp when he was a child that was about a mile from where Melissa Witt's body was found. And then later, at the time of her disappearance and death, even though he might try to argue this point, we've been able to prove that he was a carpenter at that same church camp, again, that was about a mile from where her body was found in 1994.
So what is Travis in prison for, and how can we connect him to Melissa Witt's murder?
Well, Travis is currently in prison in Colorado for the rape of a young woman. He met her at a mall. He talked with her in the parking lot, was able to, I guess, trick her, coerce her to give him a ride somewhere. So they got in the car together. He then forced her to a remote mountaintop, out in the middle of nowhere, where he made her take off all of her clothes. He raped her, and he then passed out due to an overdose of drugs at the time, just a drug-induced type situation. And she knew, based on, you know, testimony that she gave to the court, that's how I know this, she knew he was going to kill her. So she fled from the car completely nude and ran for her life, and she was able to escape. So he's currently in prison in Colorado for that crime. And he did not become of any interest in the Melissa Witt case until several years after her body was found. Some people came forward. I can't give a lot of details about who they were for their own protection, but they came forward to law enforcement and said that they had suspected Travis. And law enforcement tracked Travis down. We do know that he was in the area, although he claimed that, you know, he had left, you know, the Ozark area well before, you know, Melissa was kidnapped and murdered. But that was not the case. We have other witnesses to date that have given statements that he was indeed in town. You know, Travis was heavily into drugs and alcohol. He had a history of violence against women, a long history of violence against women. I've done a lot of investigative work into Travis's life, talking to a lot of people that he knew and that he was involved with. And he was notorious for raping women at gunpoint, knife point. He got away with a lot of different crimes, but just, you know, overall violence. But, you know, what's interesting about him is that he committed a fairly similar crime. You know, the girl was taken to a remote location where she was, you know, raped, and she escaped, and she was totally nude. And, you know, I shared with you earlier, you know, some of my theory about what could have happened with Melissa, and that kind of lines up. You know, he knew the area very well. He lived and worked a mile away from her body, where her body was found. And then, you know, we were later able to uncover from, you know, different witnesses that came forward that he actually participated in some illegal activities in that very area where Melissa's body was found.
Now, you said that he's committed some illegal activity in that area where her body was found, but I'm guessing with his well-known drug use, mm-hmm. that we're talking about dealing drugs and purchasing drugs in that area.
You're correct. Not only were there drug dealings, but he actually grew marijuana plants near that very rock where Melissa's body was found. So, you know, that area meant something to him, and he had a violent history against women. He lied originally about his whereabouts when Melissa went missing and was murdered. So, yeah, he's definitely a suspect. That, you know, law enforcement cannot rule him out. He does not cooperate. He hasn't cooperated with our team. You know, we've reached out to family and friends of his, and so we've done a lot of work in looking at Travis Crouch, and he will remain a number one suspect until he either, you know, decides to cooperate or we can find the evidence to prove that he did indeed kill Melissa Witt.
So if Travis did this, this would be a stranger-on-stranger type crime?
You know, quite possibly. I mean, he was from that area. He was living in that area. It's possible that, you know, he had ran into her at the mall. You know, just to put it in even more context, when he, you know, met the girl that he raped on that remote mountaintop in Colorado, he met her at a mall. And the day Melissa Witt went missing, she had lunch at the local mall with her friend. We know that the malls were one of Travis's favorite spots. I think it's feasible to think that maybe he ran across Melissa that day. Maybe they had a conversation. Maybe he followed her. That's completely plausible thing that could have happened.
Okay, time out here, Captain, because LaDonna presents an interesting observation here that potentially Travis could have been watching at the mall.
Yeah.
And spotted Melissa there. I mean, what better place if you're a predator and you have a type that you're hunting.
Yeah.
What better place to go to if you're looking for someone, you know, 18, 19 year old, 20 year old attractive young woman, you go to the mall.
And maybe not so much even just a type, but this is your MO. You know, we've seen this multiple times in serial killers or serial rapists where they kind of come up with a plan. Their job then becomes to execute that plan over and over and to get better at it. And we already know that he likes to pick up his prey from the mall.
And it's pretty simple, too, because if you go to the mall, mm-hmm. you find somebody that you like, you follow them. If they end up in a situation where they could be easily compromised,
right.
you abduct them and you've achieved your mission. Right. If not, if that situation never arises, you just go back to the mall the next week and repeat. And this is something that if this was Travis and if this is his MO, you know, this wasn't the first day that he went to the mall and this happened. This is something he probably did time and time again until he found a person that he thought he could easily overcome.
Well, and think about how many times we see it with other killers again, where it's you're developing. So, you know, somebody like Ted Bundy will be a peeping Tom first, you know, and so they're developing. So he could have just been going to the mall for a while, you know, just as a, let's say, as a kid. And he just liked going there and following a girl around. And that became, okay, now I want to follow her outside of the mall. Now, you know what I mean? And it seems like he also needed to be on drugs during this time. So you kind of see that too with somebody like Dahmer, for example.
Yeah. Needed to be or wanted to be.
Right, right.
I guess there could be a debate there. The situation, though, for me would be if this was Travis and if where he first encountered Melissa was, in fact, the mall, mm-hmm. we have to keep in mind that he would have been not easily detected because we don't see any scenario where Melissa appears to be on guard for the rest of the day. She was not at the mall alone, you know, and mm-hmm. we've interviewed that person. Investigators have interviewed that person later. They don't give any clues, any leads as to that aspect. So this person would have been where Travis seems to have been very out of control in his attack in Colorado. And you're right. That's because of the drug use.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever, if this was his MO and he was at the mall that day, he was in control at that time. He would not have stood out for any reason.
He necessarily didn't actually have to meet her. You know, it could have just been she caught his eye and he just kind of followed her at a distance.
Okay, LaDonna, that's the thing that you have to ask yourself. Is this just pure coincidence mm-hmm. that this guy that has picked up, followed a girl from a mall before? And our victim here, Melissa, happened to be at the mall earlier that day.
Right.
He also has ties to the location where her body is eventually found. The big question I have is, you know, we know he's capable of rape because that's what he's been convicted of in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
What I need to be convinced of is why are we so convinced he's capable of murder? Because it's alleged that he's committed multiple rapes at gunpoint before. What made that attack in Colorado different from the previous attacks?
Yeah, and how do we know that he was going to kill his victim in Colorado?
Well, I mean, that's based on her testimony. So the only reason she got away from him is because he was also drinking and doing drugs while he held her in this car. I mean, he was raping her repeatedly. It was a violent attack. But he passed out. And she was so certain that he was going to kill her when he woke up, that instead of trying to put her clothes on or even take them with her, she took off completely nude. She knew she couldn't waste any time to get away from him. That's her testimony. She escaped with her life. She was certain he was going to kill her. And the attack was just so brutal and violent. And as far as the other rapes, now, those are things that he was never charged for. Now, these are rapes that occurred to women who did not come forward to law enforcement for a variety of reasons. Perhaps, some examples. And I'm talking in a little bit vaguer terms because some of these women that I've been in touch with, I need to protect them because he will be paroled at some point. And I want to be certain that if Travis Crouch hears this, that he isn't able to go after the particular people that I have spoken to. But, you know, these were women that were involved in some things that were less than desirable. Doesn't mean that they deserve what happened to them, and that's not what I'm implying. But those were their words. That's what they told me, and that's why they didn't go to law enforcement. And, you know, he, Travis, you know, he being Travis, was involved in a biker gang and some other activities that were just very violent. I mean, he tried to kill a man in one state and served some time there. You know, he's been arrested pretty much in every state that he's ever been in, South Carolina, Louisiana, Colorado, Arkansas, for, you know, anything from theft to trying to burn things down to, you know, stabbing people. But he, you know, Travis has been described as someone that has no care at all for life. It doesn't matter to him. I mean, he's literally walked up to people and just stabbed them in a bar. He doesn't care. You know, he wasn't a half bad looking guy all those years ago. I mean, I've seen some photos of him. So it's easy for me to believe that a young girl might talk to him at first and be flattered and not realize, you know, what they were dealing with. But he's a dangerous predator, and I hope that he does not get paroled. But it's looking like parole is quite possible for him in about 8 years.
Do we have any eyewitnesses that would put Travis in the area back in December of 1994?
We do. We have people that continue to say that he was in the area. We can't place where he was for sure. We know that he was arrested in New Orleans on New Year's Eve or day. I'm not really sure how that worked out, if it happened at midnight or 12:01 a.m., you know, where that, but that's the next arrest that he had. But, you know, we have pretty reliable sources that have come forward all these years later that say, oh, no, you know, Travis was here. And they believe that that he took off to Louisiana shortly after the body was found because he was afraid he was going to be blamed. Is what some of these sources have told us. But as far as, you know, being able to definitely prove that, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt, no, we can't. But, you know, enough people have come forward to kind of paint a picture for us that we're very confident that Travis was here. We're very confident that he has people that were close to him, you know, relatives that have not told the truth because they want to protect Travis. And, you know, there's only one reason why he would lie and say, no, I'd already taken off to Louisiana, but he was really here because he was possibly involved in this crime. He has something to hide, for sure, but he has not responded to any of my requests for an interview, and he has not responded to any of my letters in prison. I have corresponded with his mother and a sister of his, but you know, we've not had any real cooperation.
So you say that you know that Travis was arrested in Louisiana on either New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, but she wasn't found until the 13th. Fill me in here. Are we saying that after he was arrested, that he was released and potentially came back to Arkansas?
He was released after that arrest, and he started traveling, we believe, back through this area as he made his way to meet with some friends to possibly go on to his next adventure. And I'm not sure if he went to South Carolina first or he went straight to Colorado. It's really difficult to track his movements because you have to remember it's two decades later and you're dealing with people that don't really want to cooperate. So he wasn't held very long in Louisiana, maybe a day for that arrest. from what I recall. So, you know, it doesn't mean that he came back and he was the one that moved the body. It's possible, well, let's think about this, that someone that was close to him knew that he had killed Melissa Witt, and perhaps they were overcome with guilt and they moved the body. I mean, anything like that is possible. You know, I can't say for sure. I can't say for sure that Travis Crouch killed Melissa Witt, but he's an awfully good suspect that has lied repeatedly, has a violent history, and refuses to cooperate. So, I mean, it seems to me that he would want to help rule himself out, but he has no desire to do that.
Well, with this drug use, too, I mean, you have to wonder if he even knows that he did the crime.
Possible. My guess would be if he spotted her at the mall, he has some good recollection of what took place leading up to getting her in his vehicle.
Meaning he was probably sober at some point.
Yeah, and he would recognize her face on the news.
Right.
But I guess the thought here is that maybe what's more likely is that because of his intense drug use, day after day, and alcohol use, and a combination of both, that he probably got so intoxicated or high one day that he told somebody either where Melissa was, where her body was, or what he had done.
Yes, that's my thought, because he was heavily into drugs, The only thing that kept him from remaining that kind of a drug addict is this stint that he's doing in prison for the rape of that girl in Colorado. I mean, Travis was just walking chaos.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, I highly recommend that you give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/garage today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/garage. This show is proudly sponsored by BetterHelp. Check out BetterHelp.com/garage today.
The best part of spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get. It's kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless. When Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. It's time to switch to Mint Mobile. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all of your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. Save a lot of money with Mint Mobile. Get their great mobile wireless service delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. That's premium service at a great price. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/TCG. That's mintmobile.com/TCG. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TCG. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All right, we're back. Cheers, me mateys.
Before we get back to LaDonna with her second suspect in the Melissa Witt murder case, the first suspect, Travis Crouch, it seems to me that the theory would be this, that he would have gone to the mall looking for a potential victim that day, came across Melissa, followed her for a portion of that day until he saw his opportunity with her getting out of her vehicle in the parking lot at the bowling alley.
That's a pretty big time gap, too.
Approaches her, as LaDonna said, that this Travis may be an attractive young man that she may not have run off screaming from immediately.
Right.
He attacks her, forces her into his vehicle, dumps her in a location, takes her to a location that he knows well, murders her there, leaves the body there, and then at some point in some kind of stupor, some intoxicated stupor, he tells somebody that he knows, someone close to him, either where she's located or what he has done.
Yeah, so either he moves the body or somebody that he told possibly moves the body.
Yeah. Potentially he could have moved the body because he told somebody where it was, but you would think that if the whole point was concealing the body, you would move it to a location that would conceal it further rather than putting it in a place where it would be found.
Right. But I think the theory on this is that, well, in his drunken stupor or drug state, maybe he did this and didn't mean to bring her out into the open. Or again, if he told somebody, that their guilt got to him and figured, hey, if I move the body, somebody will find it.
But I'm with LaDonna. I think there's no coincidence that there happens to be this phone call where somebody seems to be describing Melissa Witt, and then the next day the body's found. I don't think that's any coincidence at all.
Well, let's get into the second suspect.
Well, you know, Larry Swearingen was arrested in 1999 for the murder of Melissa Trotter. Melissa Trotter was a 19-year-old community college student in Montgomery County, Texas. She met Larry Swearingen by chance in a, you know, it's like a convenience store slash pizza parlor type parking area where their conversation was videotaped by a security camera. They talked for 2 hours on December 6th in this parking lot, just in this little area on the outskirts of Lake Conroe in Texas. Okay, so we know that he came across her. We know he was very intrigued by Melissa Trotter. And according to testimony in the Melissa Trotter murder trial, he went back to work the next day and told some of his fellow electricians that he'd met this really cute girl and that she was going to meet him for lunch that day. Well, Melissa Trotter stood him up, didn't show up for lunch, and these same witnesses told the court in the murder trial that when she stood him up, that he became very angry, eerily angry. So that was the 7th. We know that witnesses saw Larry Swearingen on the campus of the community college in Montgomery County, Texas on December 8th, that he sat and talked with Melissa, and that they left together. They got in his vehicle. Melissa Trotter was never seen again. Never seen again. She was found roughly, you know, 30, 40 days later in the Sam Houston National Forest, and she had been strangled. She had been sexually assaulted and strangled.
How long until they make an arrest on Larry Swearingen?
You know, he was arrested fairly quickly. You know, they were able to determine really quickly that he knew Melissa Trotter. They were able to pull that security camera footage. They were able to get, you know, some information about the things that he was saying about Melissa Trotter, and they were really able to tie the pieces together pretty quickly. His wife at the time would later testify that when she came home to their trailer that evening, that the trailer was in a disarray. You know, he had brought Melissa Trotter back to the trailer. That's where it's believed that she most likely spurned his sexual advances, and he then raped her and strangled her with a section of his wife's pantyhose, and then loaded her up and dumped her body in the Sam Houston National Forest. Of course, he denies it.
What evidence do we have against Larry Swearingen in this case? And we know that he has disputed that he was at work at the time that Melissa Trotter disappeared.
Well, there's a lot of evidence. It's what's described as a mountain of evidence against Larry Swearingen. And I would agree with that, as I have the court transcripts, the testimony against Larry Swearingen in the Melissa Trotter trial. So I've taken about a year and a half to do a case study on Larry Swearingen. He killed Melissa Trotter, there's no doubt. But as far as evidence, there was hair and fiber evidence found in his truck that belonged to Melissa Trotter. There was, you know, fiber evidence on her body that belonged to Larry Swearingen. You know, he had a cell phone at the time, and it pinged right around the area where he would have had to have driven through to dump her body in the Sam Houston National Forest. You know, her pack of cigarettes were left behind in the trailer that where Larry Swearingen lived. Later, they were able to find the other section of pantyhose that was used. You know, he tore it apart to strangle Melissa in a trash can at Larry Swearingen's house. Paperwork that belonged to Melissa Trotter was found all in this area near where Larry Swearingen's family lived. It was all found strung out across the street. So it's almost like it had been blown out of a trash can or some kind of area where Larry had hidden it. So that's just a little bit of the evidence that is against Larry Swearingen. Of course, he and his defense team try to paint a picture that he had been at work, that he had picked his grandmother up, that, you know, he and Melissa Trotter were just great friends. But you have to keep in mind, he had only met Melissa Trotter 2 days prior. There wasn't a great friendship with Melissa Trotter. You know, there are a lot of interviews with Larry Swearingen out there in different forms of media about this case. And if you put them all together, he never tells the same story about Melissa Trotter. It always changes. You know, one story is that they had a consensual sexual relationship for weeks. Well, that's not possible. He only knew her for 2 days. You know, that they were great friends and they spent a lot of time together. Well, that's not true. He only knew her for 2 days and she stood him up the next day after they met. I mean, it's a lot of, you know, smoke and mirrors with Larry Swearingen and his defense team to try to create doubt in the minds of the general public that he did not kill Melissa Trotter. But the fact is he did kill Melissa Trotter. There's just no two ways about it.
Were you able to speak with his ex-wife?
He has many ex-wives, and I have spoken to two of them. They have been very, very cooperative with me, these two particularly, and I'd prefer not to use their names, but these two wives have shared with me how Larry tried to strangle both of them in anger, that he was violent, he was volatile, and they firmly believe that he killed not only Melissa Trotter, but that he also killed Melissa Witt, and they believe that he has killed other women. And I'm in agreement. I believe that Larry Swearingen is a serial killer.
Before we get into that, let's get into Larry's background.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds to me like he had traveled around a lot. He was some kind of contractor or an electrician. Is that correct?
You're correct. He traveled as a journeyman electrician. He most often traveled with his stepfather, Joe Martinez, and they traveled all across the eastern United States, all kinds of areas. You know, he's being looked at by law enforcement in many different locations where there were young women found strangled. He's a prime suspect in more than just these two cases.
But what about his background?
He had been in a lot of trouble in school. He had broken into you know, his own high school and stolen some things. He was in trouble quite a bit for stealing cars, you know, breaking and entering into buildings, you know, fighting, just a variety of things. I mean, just a career criminal is how I would describe Larry Swearingen.
The funny thing here, Captain, when we spoke with LaDonna and we got into all this conversation about Larry Swearingen being a key individual to look at as a suspect in the Melissa Witt murder and abduction, the funny thing was we were speaking with her on the date that Larry Swearingen was supposed to have been executed.
We always have little weird serendipitous things happen like that.
Yeah, he was supposed to have been executed on November 16th, and it was actually pushed back before we had the conversation with her. However, it was just kind of ironic that we were speaking with her about him on the very day that he was supposed to have been executed. So let's listen in as we get some better information onto why are they pushing back his execution. They continue to do that. In the beginning, they were pushing it back maybe a year, and then they shortened it to the point where they're pushing it back just a couple of months. Mm-hmm. If we continue what they've been doing, he was supposed to be executed in September of this year, then later in November. So I'm guessing maybe they'll finally kill this guy in January or February of next year. But let's listen into why the holdup. Is it because he's being looked at as a suspect in other cases, other murder cases, mm-hmm. or is it just simply the appeals process?
So the holdup in his execution, it has nothing to do with the other cases. So I will say this, is that Larry Swearingen was able to luck into a phenomenal defense team. I mean, he has the Innocence Project backing him. Now, in my opinion, and it's my opinion only, the Innocence Project took him on because they wanted to see some of the laws change in Texas. And that did happen because they took on his case, right? The way they handled DNA in cases. So that was a win for them. But they've worked very hard to create this doubt that Larry Swearingen is guilty. And it's a frustrating point for me personally. Because, you know, as I mentioned, there is a mountain of evidence that he killed Melissa Trotter. And it's almost offensive to me that anyone would go to these lengths to defend this man. The crux of their argument is this. They wanted additional DNA testing. And that was part of the law change that they had made. It just didn't apply to Larry Swearingen's case. But they wanted additional DNA testing on some things that were found on Melissa Trotter's body, evidence under her fingernails and I think evidence on the pantyhose and some things like that. But let me explain to you why that is absolutely asinine. You know, the jury was presented with this information. The jury knew going in to this case that there was a full DNA profile of an unknown male found under Melissa Trotter's fingernails. So they knew that. The jury saw that. They also knew that there was a full DNA profile found on some other evidence. And, you know, and there would be. The pantyhose that he used to strangle Melissa Trotter belonged to his wife. Okay, so there was an explanation for these things. So the jury knew all this, and they convicted him anyway because of all of the other evidence. But, you know, of course Melissa Trotter had another DNA profile under her fingernails. She had been at school that day. She had done all kinds of things the day before. I mean, she didn't meet up with Larry until noon that day. It's absolutely feasible that there would be another DNA profile. I would be surprised if there wouldn't be. But, you know, that has just been the crux of their argument. And they just hammer that home in the media. If I sound like I'm frustrated about it, I am, because a 19-year-old girl was killed. And they're dismissing the mountain of evidence because they want to make an argument on something that the jury already looked at and said, okay, I understand that. It's been explained. We still believe that he killed Melissa Trotter based on all these other things. But, you know, so Larry has built a career on death row of being able to weasel out of these executions because they keep filing motions that keep getting struck down by the higher courts. But this latest situation with the delay of his execution had to do with two different things. One being that, unfortunately, the paperwork was filed incorrectly in Texas with the wrong office. And that's just an unfortunate event that happened. So that delayed his execution. And then you've got to couple that with this greatest and latest scandal of Larry Swearingen, where he has been working with another death row inmate for who knows how long and had talked this death rower into admitting at the midnight hour before his own execution that he was the one that had killed Melissa Trotter. Fortunately, this guy, and his name is Anthony Shore, had some conscience before it all went down, and he admitted to officials what was happening. And so that delayed Anthony Shore's execution, but it's also then created this huge media circus around Larry Swearingen. I mean, it's just one more way for Larry to delay his execution, and in his mind, to try to create some kind of doubt where there is no doubt. He killed Melissa Trotter.
So basically, Larry got this other gigantic pile of dog dookie to confess to the murder of Melissa Trotter. And that actually postponed both of their executions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the justice system should go, hey, we see what's going on here, right?
Mm-hmm.
It should be pretty simple.
Well, I mean, you know, Anthony Shore was known as Houston's tourniquet killer. So he killed many girls in the same style and fashion as of Melissa Trotter or Melissa Witt. You know, they were strangled. But so he's also believed to have maybe some sort of head trauma. I don't know a lot about Anthony Shore, but I do know this. I do know that Larry has been working that angle for many, many years because he's got some people that have been blogging for years about how there's no way possible that it was Larry Swearingen that killed Melissa Trotter, and you know they put out the theory that it was Anthony Shore. So this has been something that he's planning for a very long time. But Anthony, you know, has admitted to the things that he has done. And I think that he just got suckered by another death row inmate. I think that's what happened. I think that, you know, maybe there was a part of him that believed, you know, Larry, that he didn't kill Melissa Trotter, so he was willing to take that rap for him. I don't know what kind of deal that they cut. I really don't. But, you know, Larry Swearingen is very manipulative. He's described as someone who's very charming, and he's a liar. And I think that Anthony fell for that. You know, I don't know Anthony Shore personally, but I would think that maybe he had a bout of conscience right before and couldn't follow through with it. Maybe something told him that that was wrong, that if he went through with this, they would be letting a killer out on the street, because if they did, Larry will just kill again. There's no doubt in my mind about that. It's hard to understand or to know what kind of relationship those two men have. I mean, they're both on death row because they killed young girls. So, you know, the caliber of these people that we're talking about is not the greatest.
So let's get into the connection between Larry Swearingen and our victim, Melissa Witt. I believe the way that the story goes is that he was ultimately connected to this case, this cold case, because of a piece of paper or some type of note that was found in his jail cell.
You're correct. What happened is that authorities in Texas contacted the detective at the time, which is Detective Ryder, in Fort Smith, and said, I don't know if you're aware of who Larry Swearingen is, but we found a notebook in a cell turnover, and it had your name, Detective J.C. Ryder, and it had Melissa Witt's name, and it had December 1st, 1994 written down. And that's really how Larry Swearingen came to the forefront of the minds of Fort Smith police. And that's when they started looking into Larry Swearingen. And that's when it really started becoming apparent that it's quite possible that he killed Melissa Witt, that he could be involved, and that he had to be looked at closer.
All right. So with the Melissa Witt case, Larry would have had been working in the area or had family in this area?
Well, he does have family in Arkansas. They live in Clinton, Arkansas, which is, you know, roughly a couple hours away from Fort Smith. We do know that he was there in Clinton, Arkansas, just days before Melissa Witt was killed, because law enforcement was able to track down a receipt where he bought a car part in Clinton, Arkansas. So we know he was in the area. I know I can't put him back in Texas until mid-December, late December. So he had plenty of time to kill Melissa Witt. I believe it's quite possible that he was working in the area. And law enforcement did look at that angle. However, at the time, and there was so little to go on, they didn't know that he was just a journeyman electrician. They didn't realize that he would be working under the license of Joe Martinez. So when they did their search on anybody that had filled out a license or was working in, you know, the greater Fort Smith area, they looked under the name Larry Swearingen. And so we're trying to recreate that search now, two decades later. It's really difficult if the records even exist. But we know he was here. We've got an ex-wife that can place him here. And she's pretty confident that he killed Melissa Witt. But we have to have more than that before he could even be charged. And that's something that we're looking at. We've been in touch with a retired detective, one of the original detectives in the Trotter case, who tells us that they did find a receipt on Swearingen that was in from the Fort Smith area in December of 94, that first week of December of 94. And they assure me they believe that he killed Melissa Witt. So I'm trying desperately to find that receipt.
Are you able to say what one of the ex-wives said to you regarding why she firmly believes that Larry killed Melissa Witt?
She has the suspicion for a couple of different reasons. And one is that he was very abusive to her, and he had actually violently raped her, choked her until she blacked out, and dumped her in the woods. He thought she was dead. And so, you know, in her mind, this is something he's very capable of doing. But also, she, at the time that they were together, she found quite a few women's IDs on him. And he couldn't explain it. He took them away from her, and he dumped them in the woods. Now, does she remember if one of those belonged to Melissa Witt? No. But that really set off my radar.
Have you been able to talk with Larry?
I have corresponded with Larry Swearingen several times. He's not a fan of LaDonna Humphrey. And I'm not a fan of Larry, and he has actually had his legal team serve me with, I think I'm at my fourth cease and desist, refuses to cooperate, you know, will not talk about Melissa Witt at all, not at all, denies that he killed Melissa Trotter. And in my last correspondence with him, you know, I just pointed out, hey, you have family in Arkansas. When they were interviewed, they said that you used to camp and hike in that very area where Melissa's body was found. Is that true? You know, he doesn't respond. You know, I remind him, both girls were named Melissa. They were the same age, same kind of physical appearance. You know, both of their bodies were dumped in a national forest 50 miles from the site of the abduction. Both girls were abducted in the same week, exactly 4 years apart. If that doesn't, you know, ring a bell of a serial killer, I don't know what does. But what, you know, both girls were strangled. And then, and this is the clincher for me. Melissa Witt had a watch stolen from her. Her murderer stole it. It was a Mickey Mouse watch. Melissa Trotter's watch was stolen from her. It was a Mickey Mouse watch. Her killer stole it.
That was my favorite part of the entire interview. Mm-hmm. Right there, and I'll tell you why. Because
you have a Mickey Mouse watch?
If anybody followed my good instruction many, many months ago and picked up one of our recommended reading books. This was the called A Good Marriage by Stephen King. It's not a true story. It's a fictional story.
Nobody listens to you.
If anybody picked that up, they know why that I found that part so interesting. When she says, mm-hmm. And this is all hearsay, by the way, we have to throw that in there because it's a telling from one person to another than to us. We don't know if this is in fact true.
Hearsay, smearsay.
The portion where she said that the wife, one of his ex-wives of Larry, found several driver's licenses mm-hmm. in their home from young women. And when confronted about it, he has no answer. He confiscates them, and then he supposedly dumps them or discards of them in the woods somewhere.
Right.
That's exactly what happened in A Good Marriage. The husband is away on work. She's looking, the wife is looking for something in the garage, and she comes across a little hidey hole, and inside there's several driver's licenses mm-hmm. of girls that had gone missing in the surrounding states.
And it's exactly like a case that we covered.
Which one?
It happened in an attic, not the garage, and a dark past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
in the attic. They
Felix Vail case.
I think the people that were renting off of him, I believe, found the box.
Yeah, they found some old items of one of his very likely victims. The thing that we should, you know, I want to mention this because we are talking about Stephen King. We're talking about storytellers. You know, the Mickey Mouse watch, the two victims that happen to be named Melissa, They're the same age. They're abducted in the same week.
4 years apart. Yeah.
Some of that seems a little storyteller-ish. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems a little icing on the cake. I don't know that a killer that's attacking two women that he would have, you know, there's a very likely situation that if Larry did kill both of these Melissas, That he likely would not have known. That's not why he killed them. Right. It's not like he's driving around looking for the next Melissa.
I agree with you, but we do have evidence that he met the first Melissa. If he met Melissa with
the second Melissa, right. It's a tricky story because he was convicted of Melissa Trotter's case, But that was actually after Melissa Witt's.
Right. So we have evidence that he met Melissa Trotter beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing that if this is a victim, you know, his MO would kind of suggest that he would have met Melissa Witt prior to the attack.
Possibly could have had some kind of interaction with her in advance. But I think the thing that we're kind of losing track of here In this story is what really is tying Larry Swearingen to this case. Keep in mind, her name is found written, Melissa Witt's name is found written in a notebook of his, As well as, and I were talking about this, as well as the detective.
Yeah, slow down a little bit. So he's in a different state.
He's in another state. This is like a decade later.
Death row.
Yeah.
And they find her name, and not just her name, but the detective's name. I mean,
I just keep going back to the fact that there's no reason for him to have her name written on any of his property at all.
Yeah, it's pretty, that's pretty mind-blowing.
So fill us in on the current state of Melissa Witt's case.
You know, the case is more active now than it has been in years. And, you know, we work daily with law enforcement. And, you know, I just talked to the detective this morning. And, you know, they allow us, our team, to run a tip line. And that tip line is pretty active. And then we share that information on immediately with law enforcement. And, you know, they're following up on tips all the time. And I do believe it's just a matter of time. Right now, my focus is, solely on trying to get Larry Swearingen ruled in or ruled out before he's executed. Once he's executed, we may never know.
All right. And so that documentary might come out this spring, but they're still negotiating that. So once we know something, we'll let you know.
Well, and if you want to find out the release date, they will be making updates regarding that on the website, which is whokilledmissywitt.com or their Facebook page, Who Killed Missy Witt. The thing that I'm interested in seeing here, Captain, is What more information can we find out in the documentary? Because I think that even though as forthcoming as LaDonna was, and I so appreciate her time with us and her keeping her efforts and all of her energy working on this cold case, Because I don't know if everybody picked up on this, but during the course of that interview, one thing that we learned is that unfortunately both Melissa Witt's parents have passed away since she was killed. So they didn't get to see justice for their daughter.
Right.
And sometimes you wonder, you know, we cover a lot of these old cold cases. Sometimes you wonder that when the relatives of these people start to pass away, and once they start to fade into memory, does the case itself fade into memory as well? Yeah, is there anybody out there working the case? Does anybody still care? And it's great to see somebody like LaDonna focusing her efforts on this old cold case, working on a documentary. We've seen movement on cases because of documentaries and because of podcasts. So it's very interesting to see what's there. I think I was trying to read between the lines there. I think there's some more information that will be released when that documentary comes out. And I also want to include, if anybody wants to, has heard this case and has some information that they can offer, you can submit tips at the whokilledmissywitt.com website. There's instructions there on how to do so. Or there's a phone number that you can call to submit a tip, and that's 479-221-9393.
All right. Do we have any recommended reading for the week?
We do. This week we're recommending Convenient Suspect. And the strange thing here, a little coincidence, tie into what we covered this week and last week. It just so happened we had two cases back-to-back. We didn't plan this. That happened to take place in December of 1994. We wanted to cover those. Well, we did with DeJuan Sims last week and then Melissa Witt this week. Well, that inspired me to come up with this recommended reading. It's from a cold case from December back in 1994 that took place in Pennsylvania. And I shouldn't say a cold case because this one has been technically solved as far as the books are concerned. But you can tell by the title, Convenient Suspect, there's a lot of people out there that wonder if they have the right suspect. So if you're interested in this, pick up Convenient Suspect, A Double Murder, A Flawed Investigation, and The Railroading of an Innocent Woman. And this is by Tammy Mall.
And you can find all of our recommended reading on our website, truecrimegarage.com, and just click on the recommended page.
Yeah, and also at truecrimegarage.com, we have our blog there as well as our store page. So check all of that good stuff out. All right, everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you for telling a friend.
Yeah, thanks for sharing on social media.
Be good, be kind, and don't litter.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.